Resonant Truth presents Natural Time, Mayan Astrology for a Modern Age. I'm Lisa Starr. I was raised in the faith of the Mayan sacred calendars. These ancient cycles have been resurrected for a modern audience and called Natural Time, in part because our year of uneven month lengths is, by comparison, really unnatural. I am not here to lead any kind of revolt against the Gregorian calendar, but I do want to bring the Mayan alternative to light, and I want you to know about Mayan astrology, where the passage of time and your birthday within it has deep mystical and magical significance according to indigenous spirituality. I am passionate, I am transparent, and I am emotionally available, if not volatile. And that's because I'm a blue overtone storm. You can find out what you are at resonanttruth.com. Today on the Zolk'in Count is called White Planetary World Bridger, and it is the 10th day of the Red Earth Wave Spell. It's also Christmas 2019. It's the end of Christmas. It's nighttime for me. It's raining really hard. That might be the new auditory interference that you have to endure, but that's pretty nice. It's like flooding. It's pretty heavy rain. It's extreme weather. And let's see. I think I'm just going to riff on this Christmas day because it's a reference point for plenty of people. You know what you were doing on Christmas. If it's the day after or a couple of days later, it's White Planetary World Bridger. It is the day of manifestation, the peak of our wave. Our wave spell is about Red Earth. I'll talk about some of the characteristics of that again in a minute, but let's just revisit what planetary means. It means that we can't get any higher in our wave form that makes up a 13-day or 13-moon or 13-year wave spell. It is the highest pitch of our ascent, and it is the moment when we're not allowed to go any higher. And so it is both this incredible accomplishment, and it's also the end. You know, the accomplishment is over. I love that tension or that predicament. I just love it. It's a great physics lesson that every great achievement is the maximum you could accomplish before you were stopped. And I mean, I suppose there's indications of perfection, like you could take a test and get every answer right, etc. But in nature or this metaphor of growth, we can say that the planetary day or tone is the highest point of our ascent because that's when it ends. That's when the ascent ends. And I just love that. So planetary days have both aspects, the one of amazing accomplishment, this high pinnacle, a point of growth, noticing that you maybe have amassed something, whether it's knowledge or material possessions even. But it's also when we cannot deny that we are of the planet rather than of the sky. I really love that poetry, that lyricism, that a planetary tone, like a mountain peak, it is the highest part of the planet perhaps, but it is absolutely demonstrating that we're of the planet versus of the ether, of the cosmos, you know, the broader cosmos, the separated extraplanetary cosmos. So you can feel a planetary day like, wow, I got a lot done. And at the same time, like, whoa, I'm being stopped in my tracks on that particular topic or front. I felt that on the planetary day, like, whoa, so much achievement in a certain direction or multiple directions. And then, yep, that's where my dreaming, my daydreaming, my, not fantasia or fantasy, but just more like, you know, the skywalker, no more skywalking, come back to Earth. But it wasn't so bad. World Bridger is otherworldly. We can cross the world bridge, which is between this lifetime and the afterlife, I guess. I'm not sure we can prove that principle, but that's how I interpret the day of death for the Maya white world bridger, is our neutralization of the death skull hieroglyph indicating the tribe of death and crossing, because we want to eliminate death as an end in our mind's eye. When we are reenacting indigenous teachings, we want to feel death as a bridge between worlds. So world bridger, did it have expressions of death? Your Christmas? Death of limitation, that's really how I try to teach that, how I was taught that, because any death, whether it's physical and literal, like I'm dying, I'm dead, I'm crossing over the other world, that's a liberation from this very imperfect carnal reality. This incarnation is very binding compared to the expansion that happens in the afterworld. That's another way of interpreting indigenous perspective, Mayan perspective. I have some personal experience that I've probably alluded to on a podcast in the past, where I had a near-death experience that was an illness. So, and it wasn't gradual. It was staph infection. I got it, and 3 days later they couldn't treat it, and was hospitalized for those 3 days, and I wasn't coming back. There was a panic in the doctor's attitude. Anyway, in that state, I felt really peaceful. I felt like I'm going. It's really nice. It's going to be nice when I get there. I'm going to just head on out. Thanks for the incarnation. I like the afterlife. It feels very, very peaceful and unpressured. And then I joke, like, it could have been the morphine. It could have been the morphine that informed my description of the afterlife as actually a place of rest instead of this high tension, high stakes human experience. But my takeaway was that, like perhaps the Maya believe, that you can cross the world bridge and be in a place that's actually really heavenly, and not a heaven that is contraindicated by a hell, just a heaven that we all die and we just get to be free. So Christmas, or a world bridger day, we don't really have a world bridger wave spell coming up. We can never have world bridger years, but I'm just giving some attention to this world bridger moment, because it's also there's a couple of things happening in per my description. Like Christmas, you know, some people celebrate New Year's. I take that so not seriously that it's not on my radar at all. But so Christmas is the end of this holiday fervor madness that starts before the American Thanksgiving. And I felt that on our Christmas, like, okay, it's over. The planetary achievement of this holiday, you know, swoon is ending today. All the crazy eating, all the travel drama, all the family drama. It's winter, it's dark, it's raining, like it's all... it's hitting its highest peak, its push, and at the same time, our limitations for enduring much more are showing up. And so this is sort of the world bridge, the death of this spirited commitment to consumerist Christmas and the feast of Thanksgiving extending through all kind of, you know, sugar binges for 6 weeks thereafter. It's all ending. We're being set free. And the 26th, when you might be listening, or the day after Christmas, regardless, is spectral, and it's blue spectral hand, and it is this liberation. The wave will break, and we will be back to, I would say, being in our minds and in our ability to reach out, touch, and accomplish things. But we've been in Red Earth. I said I would speak one sort of last surge about Red Earth. I might tackle it again when the wave spell completes itself next podcast. But, you know, I have pretty deeply discussed how Red Earth is a time of desire to to make trips or be in the kind of movement that is hiking, walking on the earth, or driving the car, or getting in an airplane, just anything that feels like a journey, like we are the earth moving through space. So blue hand, when we get to blue spectral hand, the antipode or opposite of that, I just think the way to kind of see the difference is that it isn't about moving. It's about being still enough to understand what our mind and hand is designed. They're designed to interconnect so that we can be productive and creative. And so the journey ends and we come back to a commitment to either healing with our hands, using our hands to heal, using our hands to make something, using our hands to confirm something that we see in our mind's eye. So kind of returning to logic. And I'm not always sure, you know, why they're opposite, that relationship between red earth and blue hand. You have an antipode relationship to your birth astrology, and I think many of them are super profound, or, you know, they just have kind of a deep spiritual teaching in and of themselves, and that they need each other, the antipode pairs. So I can't really describe this, except my daughter is a blue hand and her father is a red earth, and my daughter just had Christmas with her red earth father, red earth stepmother, and red earth stepbrother. And she stuck out. She told me. She didn't tell me. Because I'm a blue hand mom, I stuck out. She just did. She did stick out. And I felt for her. So I learned a little bit about antipodes through their relationship. But I don't know, you know, what is it? Donald Trump is a blue hand, just in terms of current events, God knows what he'll come up with when he's liberated from his antipode wave spell. But in his antipode wave spell, a lot happened. He got impeached. And that's irreversible and irrefutable, even if he's not convicted. And so he had a kind of blistering antipode. All right, well, let me move on. I might come circling back, but I'll do that quick astrology of the days, through the days. So Thursday, December 26th is blue spectral hand wave breaks. We move into this blue hand healing, knowing, and accomplishment. And then we'll have yellow crystal star on Friday, December 28th, which is, crystal is always the gathering day, like the storytelling of what this wave spell was day. It's when we sort of organically want to be in groups or not alone. Crystal to gather and to cooperate and universalize. And then yellow star is both beauty and power. It is the resilient sheen of that bright star in the sky, but it's also truly originally a pointed reference to Venus, of all the stars, the brightest star, maybe the brightest common star, to the eye for the Maya. And so the fact that it's a planet is kind of makes it for kind of an exciting modernization of the honoring of this particular star called Lamotte. So it's an honoring of all the stars that sparkle, and planets sparkle even if they're reflecting the sun instead of, you know, on fire themselves. But we feel that on yellow star, that we have beauty. We ourselves want to be, I think, ornamental and present ourselves as beautiful to the world. And I liken it to how how people have over time in order to prepare for war, and definitely more creatively in ancient times, would decorate themselves brightly, motley, so that they looked fierce like wild animals. And that's part of the yellow star, is preparing for something where we need to be strong. So the ornamental part could be so that we have kind of a visage that we show to the world that's not necessarily just a fighting fierceness, but like power. I am powerful. So I think of superficial beauty on a yellow star day, and I think of the deep beauty that's like a fire inside, like we are a star, or a beauty and a power that comes from reflecting the surface of a much brighter solar source off our skin, off our being. And then Saturday will be red cosmic moon. And that really does take us to the end of the red earth wave spell. And I won't be podcasting until the next wave spell, which is white magnetic dog, and starts on Sunday the 30th. The Sunday the 29th of December. And so perhaps I will just tell you, like, let's look at red earth one last time now to prepare you for the wind down. So I said that red earth is like a journey. That's not anything that's described in the Arguelles language. It's about evolving and synchronicity and navigation. Those are all kind of highfalutin words to me. I mean, they don't sound like interpretations of Mayan language, and they're not. So he chose those words to evolve, like it's a verb. Our action in the red earth wave spell is to evolve. And so I always feel like by the end of the wave spell, which is really the crystal day, maybe the cosmic, red cosmic moon, that yellow crystal star, you're going to be able to see, like, I made it from here to there. And we didn't know where, or it's not a journey that we decided in red earth. It's not. It's like just red earth moves. This planet moves through space, and it's the same circle. I think on a red earth wave spell, we don't want to go way out of our comfort zone like explorers. We mostly want to just get moving in ways that we are familiar with. We want to be in motion. And we evolve. And we see things as if we are passing through the solar system. You know, we look out the window of our own journey and we see that we've moved along in a certain direction, but we don't get to automate that. We don't get to make a decision. Like, I am setting out on this journey. My evolution that I want to happen in this red earth wave spell is this. I say that because I was savvy enough to know that we evolve in the red earth wave spell, where I was like, well, I hope I evolve like this. It's not seeming to happen, but it's okay. Some other evolution is coming, and you can look for that on Friday. You can look for it today, on Christmas, the planetary day that is the highest peak of this accomplishment of this wave spell. You can look for it in the spectral, the sort of mishmash of the dissolution of the wave breaking can liberate you to see what your evolution has been. Just look for it. What's evolved? Navigation. It's just wild. I never think of red earth as navigation, but maybe that's my colloquial interpretation of navigation, is like, you're going to want to go somewhere. You're going to want to drive. You're going to want to be out hiking. So maybe that's it. I don't ever think of the word navigation. So even though Jose Arguelles chose it, it's not in my vernacular as easily. It's just like, red earth, want to get going. And then synchronicity. I talked about that last podcast and the one before. Red earth is supposed to be this time. It's supposed to be, is maybe not the right language. It tends to be this time when you can really line up synchronicities and be like, whoa, that's wild that that's happening. I have like zero to report. I just don't have any. I don't know what's going on. It's not happening for me, but you might have it happening, and you could continue. You could yet have it happen, the synchronicity. I'm sure I'm just forgetting. Anyway, so there you go. That's red earth. It's really, it's fading. By the time you hear this, it's almost over. And I would then just, you know, way out on the outskirts of this podcast is white dog, the wave spell, which will follow. And that's lovely, isn't it? Isn't it lovely? We are in a quartet of wave spells that are considered the south. I call it the southern spiral through four wave spells: red earth, white dog, blue knight, and yellow warrior. And then there's only four more after that. So somehow, even though I very much remember beginning this Zolk'in cycle, we're going to get to the end of it relatively soon, not immediately, well past the midpoint. So I think then there's just the jump over to at the front end of the podcast. I didn't really mention that we are on day 13 of the rhythmic moon. And maybe also by the time you hear this, things are really going to be turning towards the third week of the rhythmic moon, the week in the west. And I know if you listen pretty frequently, if not always, that you have heard me go off about the third week of every moon. I think it's important. It's part of like, it's one of the things that I feature most readily in my contemplation of the 13 moon year. I haven't seen others favor it as much. I don't know why I have this attachment to making sure that you are aware that when we enter day 15 through 21 and the third week, each 7-day week, there are four of them that make up a 28-day moon or month in natural time in the 13 moon calendar. When we get to this third week and we enter the west, the place of the dream time, entering the night sky, it's blue. Water is the element associated with it. It's a place of emotional, not necessarily volatility, but there's going to be the involvement of emotions. And prior to that, like in the week that we're currently in, we've been in the north, place of spirit, air as the element. And it's more spacious. It's certainly not like a physiological experience as much as a brushing with the spirit world, the invisible world, a lot of space out there when people aren't in manifested form. People isn't the right word. When the presence, the guides, the influences are all much more vaporous than when it's here on Earth. We've been in that northern spot for 6 days now, and then there'll be the 7th on Thursday, the 26th. And then we go into the watery west and feel emotions. And we let this rhythmic moon, which is about organizing and sort of setting a pace, you know, creating a rhythm that we can feel comfortable with that's true and authentic to us, like a musical part of a greater symphony. Each one of us is cultivating right now the right rhythm for us, like what works for us, and pay attention to that. I think there's so much information. I think I'll digress and just share, like, this is the first holiday season I remember going through where I really kind of just held my own preferences. I got really lucky because I gave up the internet back before the holidays began. I live out of town where I'm nowhere near the shopping frenzy. The city I live in is a shopping destination. It's a wealthy place. People spend a lot of time buying stuff. And because I'm more remote this year, I don't have kids at home that I have to like uphold any kind of traditional approach to the holiday season. I just did the same thing I always do, which is I get up in the morning early, I walk the dogs for quite a while, not like a leash walk, but out hiking and coming home and eating almost the same breakfast every day, and then getting into my art projects. I have some chores that are related to my income, and I just I don't stop for the holidays because each of these things has to happen every day, regardless, like I was a farm girl. And that's my rhythm. I'm talking about it not as a self-appraisal that you all need to witness, like, ooh, she's getting pretty pure. I'm pretty pure because I was super impure in my use of screens for the last 5 years minimum, just grossly over-consuming for my tolerance levels. And to be out of that circuitry is so delightful, and that's my rhythm. My rhythm is slower than the digital age and more disconnected. My rhythm is repetitive. You know, that's really important to me to have the harmonic of doing sort of the same thing every dawn and every noon and every sunset, you know, to have my days ordered one after another fluidly. This is what I learned in the rhythmic moon so far. This is my rhythm. And if I learn this, it could just be my rhythm for this year, by the way, but because I'm talking about the rhythmic moon in a 13 moon wave spell. But for this particular year, that's the rhythm that seems to be presenting itself. And you have yours, and these ways that are individual, you know, musical rhythm, that analogy about the symphony, you know, we can all come together bouncing off each other with our individual ways of being, but collectively it creates something really beautiful if we authentically awaken to what our true rhythm is right now. And it's going to give us a sustained energy as we move to the pinnacle, the high point, the planetary moon of this year, which is way down the road in April. Ah, so I like how all that sounds. It sounds good. So we now know about, I started sort of on the front end with our astrology for the next few days. You're ready for that. And then I also talked, I think, enough. Like, I don't want any more to talk about the red earth wave spell. I don't have to. You know, I have a red earth father and a red earth ex-husband, and I'm not in resentment here. I just... You know, when I go through the wave spell and I have these two people in my life history, I just feel like, yeah, no, I don't have more to say about that. It's not bad. And just please, my exposure to it is sufficient. Bring on the white dog. And then, I think that, you know, I just have a couple minutes left and I'd rather just riffed already on Christmas. But I would like to say that I'm making a quilt. I actually started this quilt maybe 13 years ago. That's a right nice round and meaningful number. When I lived in another part of California, rurally, there's no internet in my life. I was influenced, I think, just because I lived in a place where people were doing plenty of crafts, and my daughters were at a Waldorf school where they were learning lots of fine art and folk art. But this quilt is actually the Zolkin. It's just so badass because I know exactly how much of it, 4/5 of it, putting quilt squares together. And then I gave up, and I know I gave up because I wasn't doing it right, and I have a lot more skills and patience. I have like life skills and quilting skills in place, so I can come back to it and repair where I was making mistakes and get it organized. But the way this is laid out as a Zolkin is it's 260 squares, and it's basically like could go on your bed, but it's sort of pretty and fancy. I think it'll probably go on the wall like a wall hanging, but I have a lot of work left to do on it. But I have been just sewing squares. Each square represents one of the 260 days, and I'm touched by this return to something that is so not cerebral. Like, I'm holding the square right now. It's a resonant day. Which one of these is it? I think that's blue resonant eagle. It's hard to explain, but there's no words on these. It's color blocks. And, you know, I'm holding the day in my hand. I can think of a blue resonant eagle person out there in the world, and I can think of them while I hold this color block in my hand. But I'm kind of like whacked out. Like, it's so moving to me. Jose Arguelles came up with the expression "time is art," which was sort of a sassy response rejoinder to "time is money." But it's so real to me that following natural time, invoking the teachings of the ascended Maya, the ancient Maya, turns everyday life into an art form or a kind of magic that happens when people witness art or make art, because art usually is a transcendent experience for the creator and also the viewer or the participant receiving it. And I don't know, I'll definitely post pictures of my quilt when I get closer or before or in process or a series at the end, because it's not just pride of accomplishment. It's sort of like, not pride, but it's the dedication of this discipline of being, you know, I'm 20 years in February or something, and I don't know, it's just the best. It's the best thing ever. So is being a mom, so is living in California, so are dogs, so are, you know, love affairs as they arise and fall, but, you know, beyond or within it all is spiritual faith, discipline, practice, and I just found something suits me. I hope you have your avenue to this kind of excitement. I'm Lisa Starr. I am another yourself, and in Mayan we say, in Lakesh.